So this description here, prescription here, should fully define our quantum theory. Yeah, promoting the classical fields to operators with, I mean, actions defined by their commutation relations fully defines the theory in principle. And now we basically want to work out the consequences. And if you recall what you did in quantum mechanics, one of the most important first steps was to consider the energy spectrum of the theory. Yeah, so in particular in classical physics, yeah, this is the expression for the Hamiltonian, and this is just continuous. Yeah? I mean, we were happy to see that it's bounded from below, so it's a physically well-defined theory, but it's a continuous spectrum. And one of the first things that you noted in quantum mechanics is that the energy spectrum is discretized. Yeah, so now let's try to see whether we can arrive at similar conclusions for the field theory. And the idea is then to consider the Fourier transform of the field. Fourier transform. Yeah, and we want to consider the Fourier transform only with respect to the spatial momentum or spatial the coordinates. So only with respect to x. Yeah, and of course, the motivation for that, yeah, we will see how it works out. I mean, mathematically, we can always do what we want. But the motivation for this is that we want to keep t fixed, yeah, because we want to implement equal time commutation relations. Yeah, so we want to keep the time dependence, in other words, explicit. Keep t fixed, t dependence explicit. And well, let's write this down. If we have a general field, yeah, so we basically view this as a or focus on the dependence on x. Yeah, so that means that we basically, for the moment, or for part of the discussion, view the t dependence more like a parametric dependence. And we perform a Fourier transform with respect to this x. So that is a 3D momentum integral then, and Fourier space. And then we have a phi, what that now is a function of p rather than x. So again, I will suppress mostly the t dependence here. And I also don't put a twiddle or something for the Fourier transform because it's clear that it's the Fourier transform field since it has a dependence on a momentum rather than the spatial coordinates. Okay, so we can insert this ansatz in the Klein-Gordon equation. Now we have the Klein-Gordon equation here. So we insert this ansatz, and then we get a, well, if you write this out, the D'Alembert operator, you have a dt squared minus Nabla squared. Now, what does the Nabla squared do? The Nabla squared acts only, I mean, the only x dependence in this expression here is this one. Yeah, so it acts on the e to the ix by getting a factor of ix down twice. Yeah, so we get from the minus Nabla squared becomes a plus p squared. Okay, so the Klein-Gordon equation for this field is simply a d squared dt squared plus p squared plus m, acting on our Fourier transformed phi equal to zero. Okay, so, well, we can bring this in a slightly different form. Yeah, we can particular combine this here and define this as omega p squared. Yeah, and then you recognize that this is really just the equation of a harmonic oscillator. So this is an harmonic oscillator. And in particular, you can immediately write down the solution. So phi, so the Fourier transform phi here is proportional to e to the plus minus I omega p t. Okay, so why is that so nice? Because, well, harmonic oscillator you have seen before in quantum mechanics. Yeah, so you've discussed this in detail. And if there's one thing that we know how to quantize exactly, it's the harmonic oscillator. So basically, in principle, we could like follow directly this prescription here, or in quantum mechanics, this prescription for the harmonic oscillator. But you also saw in quantum mechanics that it's actually useful to change the fundamental operators, the phase space variables, if you wish, that the theory depends on, from this basis here, from Q and P, to these ladder operators, A and A dagger. So we will see that it is also in the very same way, just because the underlying equation is the same. It's also in this case very useful to do that, to understand the energy spectrum. So let's just recall how that looked like in quantum mechanics. So we recall from quantum mechanics. Yeah, so there we had the Hamiltonian for a single harmonic oscillator. That is just given as essentially p squared plus x squared. Yeah, this is for a single harmonic oscillator in 1D. You could have this in 3D, you could add more and so on, but the story is always the same. And then you introduced new variables. Yeah, so you defined or performed the change of variables in the operator basis. So you introduced operators A and A dagger, and P is then expressed in this way. So you have an I omega half A minus A dagger. Yeah, and then when you employ the commutation relations of X and P, yeah, you find that A and A dagger satisfy a very simple commutation relation of this form, yeah, where A of course commutes with itself and A dagger also commutes with itself, which is trivial in 1D because it's just the same operator. But if you have more degrees of freedom, then this would still hold true. Yeah? So you would have a like the different A's for the different degrees of freedom for the different modes would still commute. So it's just a zero on the right-hand side, and the A daggers as well. Okay, so why was this so useful? Because then we could write rewrite the Hamiltonian as an omega times A dagger A plus 1/2. So the interpretation of this was that, well, there's some, I mean, this is the energy basically of the individual excitations, and this is a number operator. Yeah, starting, I mean, with eigenvalues from zero, integer eigenvalues from zero to infinity. So the lowest energy state is given for the state that this is what we call the vacuum, where the eigenvalue of this operator is zero. And then we have this vacuum or zero point energy given by 1/2 times omega. Yeah, and then there's a discrete level of energy states with just an integer number times omega, if you neglect the vacuum energy. Okay, so let's take that as a motivation and get back to our field formulation. So we define ladder operators in the same way. Yeah, from the Fourier composition or Fourier expansion of the field. Yeah, so remember that the x here, yeah, this is the canonical configuration variable, so the coordinate, yeah, and this corresponds in the fundamental Lagrangian formulation to the phi. Yeah, so that means that I should really write the x, yeah, as, and therefore the phi, as a linear combination of A and A dagger. Yeah, so how does that come about? I basically rewrite this Fourier transform in such a way that I have classical expansion coefficients. So let's write this down. So we start with the classical expansion expression. And then we perform again the Fourier transform. Just write it slightly differently now with a conventional factor of 1 over 2 omega p. Motivated, of course, by this analogy. We can just introduce this as a conventional factor because now we have components, expansion coefficients, ap, ipx, plus ap conjugate e to the minus ipx. So this is, the general way you would write a Fourier component. This concludes all the possible components. And the fact that this here is, you know that this must be the complex conjugate of this one because we want our field phi to be a real field. If it's a complex field, this would be an independent degree of freedom and you would have to call it, for example, B or something. Okay, so this is all classical, so we can rewrite this in the following form. So basically, what we want to do is now to do a change of variables in the second term. Yeah, we can write this as two integrals. In the second term, we change the variables from p to minus p and then relabel again, which means that we have an overall factor of e to the ipx that we can take out. So we get an e to the ipx, and then we have 1 over 2 omega p. And then we have an ap plus a minus p complex conjugate. And this is exactly the same form that we had written down before. So this is what we previously called phi of t p. Just to show you the correspondence to this formulation. And that is also how you see that, this must actually be complex conjugate of this one in order to guarantee that the whole expression is real. Okay, so what happens now in the quantization? In the quantization, we want to make the phi an operator. So this should be an operator. So then on the right-hand side, there should also be an operator. However, these are just numbers. This is a number, this is just a number. So the only thing that I can promote to operators are these coefficients here. So that means I want to make this an operator and then the A star becomes the Hermitian conjugate. The same way I have here, this one. And of course, in the following, I will just leave out these operator hats. I just stress this here in order to make sure you see what is actually going on. And going from the classical field and the argument that this is simply a Fourier transform to making it a quantum field that is an operator. And again, the motivation is to just formally bring this into the same form as this one, because then we can hope that we can rewrite the Hamiltonian also in this case in a form that somehow resembles this quantum mechanics case. Okay, so let's just complete this by looking at the conjugate momentum or conjugate momentum density. So our field pi becomes a, how do we get this? We basically recall that the momentum density in this case for a scalar field is given as phi dot. So and phi dot, if we look at the solution here to the Krang-Gordon equation, gives us a factor of I times omega p, depending on which of the components we take here, the positive frequency or negative frequency modes. So we get an e to the ipx, the factor of minus I omega p half, and then we have an a p minus a minus p dagger. Yeah, so now I immediately wrote it as an operator. Okay, good. So then we need to, I mean, in order to continue, we can rewrite this. Yeah, so we have basically these two fields expressed in terms of, or these two operators here, phi and pi, expressed in terms of the A and A daggers. Just a linear combination, so we can revert this. So I just state the result. You can check yourself. So we can equally well describe the AP as omega P half phi of P plus I omega P pi of P. And our A dagger then is, well, the complex conjugate of this, the Hermitian conjugate. So we have a phi minus pi P minus I omega P pi minus P. Yeah. Okay, so as a final step then, well, we have just derived operators, but not really be able to use them, we need to know their commutation relation. So let's calculate it. So we want to know AP and AP dagger, where the P's could be different. So let's call it a P prime. And then, well, I can just go ahead and use these definitions here in order to calculate it. Yeah, so I just plug in these expressions. So that gives me an overall factor of 1/2 omega P omega P prime. Okay, and then I have the commutator of this expression with this expression. So let's write it down explicitly. So we have the phi pi plus I omega P pi P commutator phi minus P prime minus I by omega prime P pi minus P prime like this. Okay, so then I want to use the definitions of this. I want to remember that these are actually Fourier transforms. Yeah, but in order to evaluate the commutator between phis and pi's, yeah, I have actually formulated my quantum theory in real space. Yeah, so I basically want to rewrite it now such that I can use these equal time commutation relations. So I have to Fourier transform back. So that gives me two Fourier integrals, one for this first term with respect to P and one with, for the second term with respect to P prime. So I have a 1/2 omega P prime. And then I have these two Fourier integrals back. Yeah? So let's say that we associate the X coordinate with the momentum P and the Y coordinate with the momentum P prime. Then we have Fourier factors e to the minus I P X. Yeah, this is the Fourier transform back. That's why it's a minus. And that's also why there are no factors of 2 pi cubed here. And then we have an e to the minus I P prime. Yeah, but now I immediately do a change of variables because I realize that everything that is a function of P prime is actually a function of minus P prime here. And also the omega only depends on P prime squared, so it doesn't matter whether I put it as minus P prime or P prime. So that gives me a plus then here. So plus I P Y. Okay, and then we have the commutator now expressed in real space. So we have a phi X plus I omega P pi X. And a phi y minus I omega prime pi y. And now I can directly look at this commutator and simplify it. Yeah, so if you expand this, yeah, these are, I mean, it's a product of four terms, so four commutators. But of course, this one commutated with this one is, where do we have it? Just zero. Yeah, so you see this one, the phi commutated when commutating with phi at a different space position is zero. And the same for the conjugate momenta. Yeah, so the only thing that we need to take into account is basically this one commutated with this term and this one commutated with this term. So let's keep this. So we have a minus, that's the first term, I over omega p prime phi x commutator pi y, and then plus I omega p and commutator pi x phi y. Now you can hear, yeah, we want to always bring it into the form that we can actually use. So we want to have it in this order, phi pi, such that we can use this relation. So this is rewritten, a minus phi y pi x. Yeah. And then of course, this commutator here and this commutator here are the same because they're just the delta function of y and x. So they're symmetric in y and x. So overall, we get a delta function, x minus y. And then we have these two terms. So we have an, well, from the commutator, we also picked up a factor of I here. So now we have I times minus I, that goes away. So we have a 1 over omega p minus plus, sorry, plus 1 over omega p prime. Okay, so that means that we can actually significantly simplify our general expression now, because now we have a delta function in x minus y, which we can use to kill one of these integrals. Yeah, so let's use it to perform the y integral, meaning that we just should replace the y here with an x. So we have, in other words, what are we left with? We have this 1 half omega p prime. We have a d3x. And then we have an e to the minus ix. And then we have a p. And this should have been a p prime. And then we have a minus p prime. So now we have used the delta function. Delta function, and then we have just this remaining term here. So times 1 over omega p plus 1 over omega p prime. Okay, but now you see that the remaining integral also becomes trivial because the only x dependent is in the exponent, and this gives us just another delta function. So this is delta 3 p minus p prime. Yeah. And that of course means that, well, p must be equal to p prime, and therefore also omega p must be equal to omega p prime. And that means that everything simplifies significantly. These two terms become the same, that cancels the factor of 1/2 here. And also, this term here just becomes an omega p and therefore cancels this one. So the final result is really just this delta function. Okay, so this is our final result for the, let me put it as a separate equation. So our commutation relation A P A P dagger prime is given like that. Yeah, and this is just as in quantum mechanics, the starting point that we can use when we use these ladder operators instead of the original operators phi and pi, so or x and p in quantum mechanics. And in a similar way, we can find that the other operators just commute. Yeah, so AP commutated with AP prime and AP dagger commutated with AP dagger prime just vanishes.